So here we are today, you know, talking to people about food on the radio. And we get to cover it from all kinds of angles. Stories and cooking and histories and science and all the rest. Or, you know, you can go out and find fascinating food essays in all kinds of places. Or you can even get a literal PhD in food studies. But back in the 50s and 60s, before we had all this food media everywhere, you'd mostly find food written about in a newspaper section called, pointedly, the women's pages. And I always imagined quote-unquote serious news editors at the time saying that phrase with kind of a sneer. And, you know, with a dash or, you know, half a cup of sexism of my own, I assumed they were just piles of recipes from corporate sponsors and coupons. But Hannah Raskin, a newspaper woman herself, looked into the history of the women's pages and found a much richer story and a few of the fascinating women who edited them. Hannah, so great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So I think I was pretty wrong about what the women's pages were, but can you tell us what they really were and how they started?
Absolutely. A lot of people got the women's pages wrong because a lot of people didn't read them. And by a lot of people, I mean men. And it really, that granted a measure of freedom to the women who edited and wrote for these pages that they really exercised and enjoyed. So you're absolutely right that there were corporate recipes that showed up on those pages. There were also plenty of reader-submitted recipes, recipes from the food editor herself. But you often had a lot of kind of Q&A format. And in that space where, you know, women who were cooking or taking care of their home, they would ask for help with this or help with that. And oftentimes these would become somewhat political discussions. Sometimes they needed help with figuring out how to, you know, find daycare for their kids. Sometimes they needed help with transportation to the supermarket. And a lot of these political issues filtered into what was supposedly a page about food.
What do you mean by they were political issues?
There was plenty of discussion of food stamps and school lunch, you know, issues as to how the government should or should not support farmers. I mean, things that were probably being covered elsewhere, but here they were being covered through the lens of food.
Yeah. And you found the stories and looked into the stories of some of these editors who were doing really interesting stuff.
Absolutely. So there are a number of these women, and I do want to credit Kim Voss, who's an academic who's really started, you know, pulling some of these names from the archives and finding some of their work. What brings them together is really what unifies food writers today. They had tremendous curiosity. They were very courageous. And that courage sometimes came into play in their own workplaces. They had to deal with what was essentially a gender segregated workplace in many cases. They would be sent to a room sometimes on a different floor so that they wouldn't be exposed to the cigar smoke and curse words that personified newsrooms at that time. In a lot of cases, they never got married, either because they were independent and chose not to, or as some of them have since said or did say, the job didn't allow them to. I mean, these were really women who were devoted to their work. So the first woman I really got a chance to familiarize myself with was the woman who held the position I now hold, which is a food editor at the what is now the Post and Courier. It was a different paper at the time. And she was very typical of these women in that she was born in Canada and started, you know, in journalism at a fairly young age, loved it, was just very excited by, you know, the whole prospect of breaking news and communicating with an audience. But her marriage didn't go well, and so she wanted a divorce, which at the time in Canada literally required an act of parliament. So she moved to Reno, came for a quickie divorce, and met someone there who suggested Charleston. In Charleston, she became food editor at the paper and just flourished. I mean, just, you know, did a wonderful job. Never gave up the Canadian tradition of drinking scotch and ginger ale. Love stories. and kept that food page going for decades.
Yeah. And you also looked into the story of a woman named Eleanor Lee.
Yeah, so Eleanor Lee I came to know when I was doing research into the chef's tournament that was held in Virginia in the late 40s. She was considered then a very authoritative panelist. They had sought her out to lend some expertise to this competition. Eleanor Lee had a radio show first and then ended up becoming the food editor for the Washington Post. And she really was a trailblazer in some of the political stuff. She, like many of her counterparts, did a fantastic job of making women feel okay about making choices in the kitchen, making choices to not be in the kitchen. We look back at a lot of these 1950s, again, women's pages, and we see, you know, a lot of discussion of shortcuts and mixes and things that now seem so at odds with where we are in the fresh, you know, local seasonal food movement. And it's really important to remember that those were the technical advances that gave these women an opportunity to spend a little less time in the kitchen. And when the food editors got behind them, they were getting behind their fellow women.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. It sounds like, you know, they were like these super self-empowered women practicing this kind of proto-feminism.
Yeah, absolutely. They absolutely were. Unfortunately, what happened then is in the 1970s, when, you know, feminism becomes a really big movement, some of its leaders did not appreciate all that these women had done and really associated them with keeping women tied to the kitchen. And, you know, and absolutely, if you go through these older food sections, you absolutely see things about pleasing your husband. That is a trope that reoccurs and reoccurs. And so in response to that, a lot of the younger feminist activists really did not want anything to do with these women. And so these women who had been rejected by, you know, by their newsrooms, by their coworkers for years and years and years, although absolutely beloved by their audiences. I mean, these were the confidants for their communities. But they had a tough time in the workplace, and then they weren't any more appreciated by these younger women for what they had done.
Such a fascinating, complicated story. Thanks so much for coming in today, Hannah.
Thank you, Francis.
Hannah Raskin is food editor and restaurant critic of the Post and Courier in Charleston. And her story on the 1948 Virginia Chefs Tournament that sparked this conversation is in the Southern Foodways Alliance's quarterly magazine, Gravy.